there will be little change either way, Dennis. Regionalization is not likely to have much of an impact on the local church.
Okay.
In full effect, certainly out in the West this is true, and it's as true as they want it to be in the rest of the church. The local churches already have a good deal of option. Whether it's written into our processes or whether it's not, local churches have simply taken that into their own hands and have done with it what they will. And what I mean is, for example, when we talk about whether or not a local church will host a same-sex wedding,
right?
There really isn't any process within the United Methodist Church for a local church to be disciplined. And I should probably put a period right there, not just over its obedience to the rules concerning same-sex unions, but in almost any other way.
The primary purpose of this podcast is to provide local church leaders with helpful elements, helpful thoughts, helpful ideas of how they might mindfully lead in their local context. My hope is that a podcast in 2023 on leadership would still speak to somebody in 2033 because the conversation is about truths that exist. That having been said, there are times in the season that we live in, the various seasons we live in, that we need to talk more about what is going on now. This is one of those times. I'm a Methodist. We periodically gather in Methodism at a thing called General Conference. We didn't have one in 2020 because of the COVID epidemic. But we are now going to meet in 2024. It is the body of people elected in 2018, 2019. They're going to be the representatives. And we're going to sit down and talk about some various things. One of them is a concept called regionalization. My guest today is Lonnie Brooks. I will include his biography from LinkedIn in the show notes so you can see a little bit about Lonnie. He is an important member of the Alaska Conference. I have been hearing about Lonnie for a number of years, I would say maybe 10, 12, 15, somewhere in that region. And he is known as thought of as a thoughtful person with very good ideas. He works very hard to make the church a better place. That's a bit of an introduction of Lonnie. For those who might like some information on how to set up their podcast app for Mindful Leader, I'll have a little coda all the way at the end, probably about the 40-minute mark or so. But it'll be after I say goodbye to Lonnie. There'll be a little period there where you can listen and I can talk a little bit about some things you might need to know. This is Dennis Shaw. I'm a retired elder from the Mountain Sky Conference United Methodist Church, and this is Mindful Leader. Let me welcome you back to Mindful Leader, and I want to welcome my guest, Lonnie Brooks, who is a member of the Alaska Conference, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about regionalization. Lonnie, welcome to Mindful Leader. Thank you for being here with us.
Delighted to be with you, Dennis. I'm pleased to have met you after a number of years. And I'm looking forward to our conversation and to whatever we can discover as we explore this topic together, and hope it will benefit those who listen.
I hope so, too. And I've been hearing about Lonnie Brooks for 12, 14, 15 years. So I'm happy to finally meet you on this as well. Thank you very much. You and I agreed that we would talk to the topic of General Conference, and we would try to talk a little bit about the topic of regionalization. And for those that are uninitiated to what's going on at General Conference, which is going to meet at the end of April, beginning of May in Charlotte, North Carolina, they may not know what regionalization is. So Could you give us a little bit of a sketch as to what regionalization means to you and how what we're going to discuss at General Conference with that?
Thank you, Dennis. Yes, I'd like to do that. I'm pleased that you said what it means to me, because almost anyone who's been involved with this topic could give an answer, but they might not all give the same answer.
I agree.
And I suspect very few of them would have the same answer that I do. Regionalization, in one way to think of it, is a shorthand notation for what actually might have started out as a concept called a local option. When you talk about local, of course, that can mean very various things to various people. In the church, I think the started out as a concept of local option, meaning option for the local churches. But more generally, it can be thought of as being option for an annual conference, in our sense of it in the United Methodist Church, or perhaps a jurisdictional level, or maybe even some other concept. And other concept is where we've actually gone with this current thrust toward regionalization. And we're in process of looking at a new idea, a regional conference, and thus the change from local option terminology to the terminology of regionalization. It's a way to think of granting to a limited area, a local area, if you will, a degree of autonomy in how it's not only structures itself, but in what its teachings might be, what its doctrinal positions might be, what its social practices might be, various other things that could be thought up. And we see some of all of that, I think, in the proposals that are before the General Conference that are most discussed and have had the most visibility, both within among delegates and around the church generally. So a local option in many things. It might be thought to be rooted in a concept. It's attributed to Wesley. It's certainly Wesley-like, although I don't think Wesley actually said this, but there's the idea that there should be unity in those things that are essential, liberty in those things that are not essential, but charity in all things at all times. And where charity, in the way it was used as that concept was being early stated.
I once knew who that quote was from. I mean, it's one of those where everybody attributes it to Wesley. It sounds like Wesley, but it's not actually Wesley himself. I'll have to, in the show notes, see if I can get who that quote is. It's a European in the 17th century, but it's a great quote. I love it. And when we're talking regionalization here, what we're to some extent addressing and is that there already is to some extent the capacity for overseas churches, meaning the Philippines, Africa, Europe, to modify the doctrinal positions based upon local context. So we would sort of be bringing the United States into what others are already allowed to do. Is that am I being fair with that statement?
You're being really fair. There's some limitations in my judgment on how far we can take that. Yes,
sure.
Indeed, there is a provision in our Constitution that says central conferences, which means conferences outside the United States, have authority to make adaptations based on their cultural context and the needs of that area. And mind you, there have been many adaptations made in these central conferences. And most of the time, these adaptations that they make are not challenged through the United Methodist judicial processes. However, it's important to remember, I think, when we talk about the ability that these central conferences have to adapt the discipline, in every case, and there have been six of them that I've found, and I think I've found them all, there have been six instances in which the adaptation has been challenged all the way to review by the Judicial Council. And not one single time has the adaptation passed muster with the Judicial Council. They've all been struck down when they've been challenged. No exceptions.
All right. I didn't know that. That's interesting. It seems like along this idea, and you hinted at it with the local church option thing, various ideas along this way have popped up in maybe 2008, but I could be wrong, 2012, before. So I've heard elements of this idea with different words to describe it. Am I remembering that right? Has this occurred under a different terminology before?
Yes, that's a very good observation, Dennis. The first more or less recent thrust at getting this done came at General Conference in 2008, at the direction of the General Conference in a prior session, a task force on worldwide nature of the church had been formed, and Bishop Scott Jones had been tapped to chair that work. That group came to General Conference in 2008 with a proposal for, and they called it regionalization. I guess actually they never used that term, but they proposed to make, I can't remember for sure. I think it was somewhere around 23 amendments to the Constitution to change terminology to regional conference. Now, mind you, they didn't go as far as in that proposal to create a regional conference in North America or in the United States, although they hinted at or moved a bit in the direction of suggesting that might be a good idea. But the idea was to change the central conferences to regional conferences and to make more powerful or more explicit the ability of those conferences to adapt the discipline to their cultural context. I don't know that it's the most important thing, but an important thing to remember about that is that even though all those 23 or so amendments were approved at the General Conference, when they faced the ratification vote among the members of the annual conferences, none of them passed. They all failed. So that was where that effort died in 2008.
And my last episode, we talked to Gayla Jo Slauson from the Mountain Sky Conference, and we talked a little bit about some Episcopal reallocation. And we sort of hinted a little bit there about the fact that there's two levels of actions that the General Conference would approve. There's things that the General Conference can approve, and it goes into the discipline right away. And there's things that the General Conference could approve at a super high level, like two-thirds, but then it still must be approved at annual conference level. And most of what we're talking about here would be that latter, that second way. It would be constitutional changes. Am I correct on that?
There are a few changes that are made to the general discipline that is not subject to that supermajority vote, but they're all based on the changes that are being proposed to the Constitution. So in essence, you're right, although there are some little fuzzy things on the edges there.
Yeah.
Yes, it all depends on getting the supermajority vote, both at General Conference and then among the members of the annual conferences subsequent to that. And now, mind you, the things that are not constitutional go into effect immediately. Well, they do if the legislation itself says so, but if a piece of legislation does not specify when it becomes effective, then it becomes effective at the beginning of the year after the close of the General Conference.
Right. Yeah, and that, and like, for example, I mean, I realize the budget, for example, is not part of the Book of Discipline, but the budget goes into effect in January following General Conference, in this case, May.
Right on.
Are you sensing in, and I'm mindful of the fact that in this internet world with email and Zoom and all of that, that you have a chance to have background chatter, conversations with people that are going to this, and you may have some sense of what's going on. Are you sensing any momentum for what is going on with, as it relates to regionalization and the amendments or the other petitions that may be required? Are you seeing anything out there that you can get some kind of wrap your mind around, or are we going to have to wait until we get to the middle of May to find out what's going on?
Those are really good questions, Dennis. And unfortunately, there isn't any solid answer, I don't believe, not just from me or from anybody, really. We're sensing a lot of conversation. There is no doubt about that, that there's a very high level of interest on this, on the part of those United Methodists who are connectionally oriented, that are connectionally involved. But unfortunately, for someone who's trying to get a sense of direction out of it, there's conversation both from those who are vigorously supporting the regionalization proposal that's most before the members and the delegates. And there's a lot of conversation about those who are vigorously opposing it as well. Now, mind you, the biggest opposition that I'm picking up comes from my friends and contacts among African United Methodists. There may be opposition elsewhere as well, but it's strongest, the what I'm picking up, from Africa. But there is almost certainly a higher level of support, if not, it would be going way too far to say unanimous, but there's a significant level of support for the idea of regionalization in the United States. And so I think that would be hard to overlook. But what we have to remember is that there is a huge representation at General Conference from Africa. So when we say that there's significant level of opposition there, it's something to be taken into account, because it's difficult for me to conceive of how we could get two-thirds of the members of General Conference, and especially two-thirds of the members of the annual conferences, supporting opposing regionalization and see it being adopted. That's a really big hurdle to get past for those who support regionalization.
It is a
I'm
high
one problem. Of them, by the way. I do support regionalization.
Yeah, I think a lot of the church leadership in the United States proper does support the idea, and we're going to have to. And this, frankly, because a General Conference is configured around the size of the church in about 2018, in a pre-disaffiliation mode, about a quarter of the representation level within the United States will go away the next time we have a General Conference. And it's very possible, very likely, I would think, that the overseas component at the next General Conference will outnumber the United States contingent in numerical capacity. That's just a guess on my part, but I can't see any way around it.
I don't see any way around that either, Dennis. The demographics simply are in that direction. And moreover, what we know is that the representation at this coming General Conference is based on figures from back in, when was the last time, I think?
2017.
Had the numbers gathered by General Council and Finance Administration. And the church is way past that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that we'll likely see a huge increase in the representation at General Conference from Africa.
A proportional change,
Exactly so. And right now, the way the numbers are set of delegates for General Conference, what we have to remember is that the lower that number gets, and up to the last two or three General Conferences, the number of delegates was around 1,000.
Right.
They tried to keep it as close to 1,000 as they could without going over over that number. So it was usually somewhere around 990, something like that. And the lower that number goes, and it's the Commission on the General Conference who determines what that's going to be, the lower that number goes, the more disadvantaged the larger conferences become, because that tends to make everything move toward the minimum representation of two members, two delegates per annual conference. So we, and our largest annual conferences are now in Africa. So right off the bat, you see Africa is disadvantaged by this lower number of delegates at General Conference.
Well, the shift, I think, would, I mean, I haven't done the analysis, but just from intuitively, when you've got so many of the Philippine conferences are, because of the geographics of how the Philippines is configured, they have a lot of conferences in the Philippines that have minimum representation.
They and all do. There aren't
they
any
all do. Okay.
They all do.
I didn't know that. But that,
they're
that
all
won't
two
go,
delegate conferences.
Yeah, that won't go away. And so that
no.
they'll continue to still all be these conferences that have two delegates, one lay, one clergy. And like you said, the if you drop from 800, the thing's like in the low 800s now, but if you drop into the 600s, those conferences that currently have two, one lay, one clergy, will still have two. And so you see the price going from 800 to 600 out of the larger conferences.
It all goes out of the larger conferences.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
The small ones don't lose anything.
Yeah, we've chatted about this, though, but I think we haven't talked very much about the impact of the local church. So let's assume, for the sake of discussion, that regionalization is approved. It is approved, because if it's disapproved, there'll be no change in the life of the local church, I wouldn't think. But if there is, if the regionalization is approved, what will that give to the local church, or perhaps the conference that it doesn't currently have? What will be the change?
My guess is, and it's strictly a guess, well, educated guess, perhaps, there will be little change either way, Dennis, that regionalization is not likely to have much of an impact on the local church.
Okay.
In full effect, certainly out in the West, this is true, and it's as true as they want it to be in the rest of the church. The local churches already have a good deal of option, whether it's written into our processes or whether it's not. Local churches have simply taken that into their own hands and have done with it what they will. And what I mean is, for example, when we talk about whether or not a local church will host a same-sex wedding, there really isn't any process within the United Methodist Church for a local church to be disciplined. And I should probably put a period right there, not just over its obedience to the rules concerning same-sex unions, but in almost any other way. The only power that the system has for disciplining a local church is really the appointment process. There's no enforcement reality here. So a local church that chooses to host same-sex weddings is doing that now, and regionalization, therefore, will not impact that kind of a decision. And most other ways that you can think of for a local church, the change would be minimal to non-existent. In fact, occasionally, when either the pastor of my church, St. John United Methodist in Anchorage, Alaska, or I make some kind of a statement to the church about what's going on in the general church, we either begin or end these comments by saying, you don't really need to worry about this, because the impact here on St. John is going to be either so minimal or non-existent that you won't notice. And I think that's truth.
Well, I had a person when I was in Salt Lake that was close to our family, and she actually thought about asking me to help perform her union with another lady. And she didn't ask me because she didn't want to put me on the spot. She didn't want, she was a regular worshiper at the church after she married her significant other, her partner. She regularly showed up at the church, but she just didn't feel like she wanted to expose me to the criticism that she felt I would be exposed to. And I respected that, but I told her I thought I could bear up under it, but it worked out. It worked out well. And so the church blessed it. The church knew about it, but it didn't place me in an awkward position of doing something that 30% of the people, 20% of the people might have been angry with me about. So it worked out. If regionalization doesn't pass, I keep hearing, for example, Mark Holland at Mainstream United UMC saying that if it doesn't pass, there is sort of a follow-on as to something that he sees that could happen. When we talked back and forth, I didn't use the word Mark Holland and Mainstream UMC. But if it doesn't pass, what happens next?
That is probably the most burning question that we've got to look at, because I think the road ahead for regionalization, because of the two-thirds requirement at two levels, is really daunting. I don't think that we can have any kind of sense of security about that, those who support regionalization. And I think the really unfortunate part of it is that I don't believe there is a plan B for the supporters of regionalization. We haven't thought that through in a consistent, thoroughgoing manner.
Okay. So we, right now, metaphorically, our eggs are all in the basket of regionalization. And if in 2025, if it passes at General Conference, and after 1 year being on the street, it comes back in, it fails, we would have to sort of regroup and figure out where we're going to go next.
I believe that's true. And it's analogous in my judgment, in fact, to the 2012 General Conference, when the conference put its whole effort into restructuring the general agencies to be more compact, more nimble going into the future, and then pass that by around 60%, but only to find it disallowed by the Judicial Council.
Yeah.
There was no plan B. We didn't have a backup plan. It's ironic that one of the plans that got folded into the plan that was approved was called Plan B. But in this sense, I mean, there was no alternative to restructuring the agencies. And so we've struggled since then, every quadrennium since, with a reduced level of support for the agencies. And so we've wound up approaching the reality, the plan that was put before the conference in 2012 by attrition.
Yeah.
And rather than being mindful, using your terminology, about mission and ministry and what we do in terms of reductions and right-sizing, maybe what you want to call it, we've done it by the budget. We just said there's no money to support that and just done whatever was expedient at the moment.
Yeah,
I fear we might be there with this.
I was the legacy Rocky Mountain Conference statistician, and then when the new creation occurred called Mountain Sky, I was a statistician there for about 4 years, 3 years, I can't remember which. And just the downsizing of the support at the General Council of Finance Administration as it related to the support of statistics was mind-boggling. It was just mind-boggling. When I first took over in 2006 or so, there was 2008, excuse me, there was a staff of about five people in Nashville that supported statistics, and they had a wide array of skills, and one person had been at GCFA for about 15 years. By the time I left the statistician gig, there was a recent college graduate good guy, smart guy, hard worker, but he had no experience with GCFA, no experience with the Methodist Church, and he was the only guy in charge of statistics, all by himself there at the in Nashville. And it was just mind-boggling the level of support that you had. And I think it was all driven by money. It was driven by...
Certainly, sure.
So that's how they downsized it. Lonnie, if you feel comfortable and you desire, do you have some Lonnie Brooks insights into these issues that you'd like to share that perhaps I wasn't smart enough to ask?
That is also a good question, Dennis. You only ask good questions, of course. Well, really, not that I haven't shared already. I think that's what I had to say that was really important from my judgment. But yeah, I think that this might be important to share. I believe that the Commission on the General Conference has hit on a really important point when they've said that this is such an important issue that it needs to have some conversation conference-wide before we make a decision about this. And so then with that insight, I think they fumbled the ball a bit by saying, and the way we're going to approach that is we're going to have to require that each legislative committee have some conversation at the beginning of the process in that legislative committee, so that all 15 of our groups of legislative committees will have a period of time set aside at the beginning of their work to talk about regionalization and the legislation that's before the conference dealing with regionalization. The problem with that is that of those 15 conversations, the only one that's going to be important in the sense of making a formal report to the plenary session and a recommendation for what legislation to reject and what to adopt and that sort of thing is the Committee on Conferences, to which all of the petitions dealing with regionalization, the intent anyway, is to assign those to that committee. So it will be processing it. And all these other 14 conversations will just be sidebar conversation. I believe that's a really flawed approach. And the reason I think it's important to acknowledge that is because we know a better way. And not to say that the outcome was all that great from my point of view from General Conference 2019, but we did know how to deal with the issues that were before us. We formed we didn't call it a committee of the whole. We called it a legislative committee that consisted of all the members of the General Conference. All the delegates were members of that committee. And I don't see any reason at all that if we believe, and I do certainly, that this is such an important issue that all the delegates need to deal with it. And which one can you think of who would say, yeah, I don't need to be involved in that decision process? There isn't any. They all want to be involved in that decision process. Make one legislative committee at the beginning of the General Conference that will deal with regionalization. And when we've got that issue put away, then we can break up into the other legislative committees and deal with the rest of the agenda of the General Conference. But we know how to do that.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Yeah. Well, I don't envy you. I'm assuming you're a delegate. Am I correct?
You're almost right. Yeah, I'm a first reserve lay delegate from Alaska. And as circumstances work out, there are only two of us who are lay who are left in our delegation. So I'm not only the first reserve. I'm the only reserve lay delegate.
Okay. All right. And so because you're a reserve, you're not currently assigned to a committee yet then, are you?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I will tell you that I pray for you guys every day, and I don't envy your task. I certainly hope it goes better than it did in St. Louis in 2019. I hope it's a more amenable and a collegial and a spirit-filled process than that seemed to be. I sure hope it works out better.
I hope so too, Dennis. But we do have to remember this about 2019. unlike in 2012, which was a total disaster because the conference put so much effort into one issue, which then died with the action of the Judicial Council. So that conference was a failure, almost from any way to look at it. It just didn't get much done, if anything. The 2019 General Conference did exactly what it was there to do. The Council of Bishops called that conference into session, a special session, to deal with the report from the Commission on a Way Forward. It said, choose a plan. And the General Conference did exactly what it was called into session to do. It chose one of the plans. Now, mind you, there was a whole host, almost half of the General Conference, who thought it made a bad decision. And so from the point of view of those who opposed the traditional plan that was adopted, it was a failure. But from an abstract point of view, it did what it was called into session to do, and you have to call it a success.
And that's a good way of thinking about it. I mean, I know that for me, I was disappointed with the outcome, but you're correct. I mean, it did what it was told, it was asked to do, and it picked a direction, and it did exactly that. Very close.
It may never recover from the direction it chose, but it picked a plan.
Anything you want to add that I've forgotten to ask?
Thank you, Dennis. I think we've ridden that horse as far as we need to.
Well, Lonnie, I've been hearing about your name for a number of years, and all I can tell you is I just want to say I'm glad I finally got to meet you. It didn't, obviously, I'm in West Virginia and you're in Alaska, but I just want to say thank you for agreeing to be my guest, and hopefully this is not the last time we talk, so thank you very much.
It's been a delight, Dennis. Thank you for inviting me.
If you're listening to this, my supposition is that you hung around to hear me talk a little bit about the apps that we use. I record Mindful Leader on a podcasting platform called Podbean. It has an app, and you can download. You can go to your utilities for your Android or your Apple device and download it. If you go to Mantuan, Mantuan dot Podbean, Podbean.com, you will see at the top of my display there four opportunities for you to download some kind of app. Podbean is one of those. You can also listen to Mindful Leader on iTunes, which is, I think, the first app that's shown on there, and you can find it there, or you can listen on Spotify, and that is also there. It's one of the apps that you can click on and download it, or you can listen on Amazon. Now, Amazon is a fee for service, so I'm getting no money from it, but it's behind something. So, but if you are currently an Amazon Music user, it's out there and you can do it. My commentary here is for those of you that are Spotify users. I used a format that was unique to Apple for the first 18 episodes. You don't need to know the name of it. It's just a technique. It's a format that's unique to Apple, but it's fairly ubiquitous across the internet. For reasons of their own, I don't know exactly why, Spotify has elected to use a non-Apple format, and I have now reformatted versions of episodes 18 and 19 and 20 in this Spotify format. Here's the good news. If you listen on iTunes or anywhere else, the iTunes version, whether it's in the Apple format or the non-Apple format, will play. With Spotify, it won't. If I talk, perhaps, and you're on Spotify, and I talk about something that happened in episode 13, you won't be able to see that on Spotify. You have two options. You can go back to mantuan.podbean.com and look at it there, or you can send me a note and I will send you a format that you can see and or follow. My email address that I use for this broadcast is Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at Mantuan, M-A-N-T-U-A-N.org. Person from Mantua is a Renaissance person. I think of myself as a Renaissance person, so it's sort of a little self-identity. I hope this was helpful. If you have any thoughts, don't hesitate to send me a note at Dennis at Mantuan.org. I said dot, did I say, if I said dot com, it's D-E-N-N-I-S at mantuan.org, O-R-G. This is Dennis Shaw. You've been listening to Mindful Leader, and I hope this was helpful to you. God bless you. Bye-bye.